makes it 2-2. Here comes, and he hits a high drive to deep left field. Hit it towards the hotel. Home run, grand slam.
Here's a 3-1. Oh, line drive left field. That's going to be extra bases.
Right-handed hitting catcher swings and drills this one in the air to deep right field. Long run for Banks. Going back, looking up. It'll short hop the wall. This will score two, and Moreno cruises into second base with a two-run double.
Jays fans, that's music to your ears. It's finally Gabriel Moreno time. It's a Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ailish and Justin Cuthbert joining us this morning. We got JD's a little bit under the weather. If you listened to the show yesterday, he sounded like a horror movie reincarnated on the show. So he's taking the day off to rest his vocal cords. So we got Cuthbert in the seat. Thanks for coming in.
It's good to be back. It's been a while since you and I have done a show
together.
It has
been.
And I think we weren't in studio last time we had a show together.
Who knows?
But we had a full week about 6-7 months ago. And then you were on vacation, so I stepped in. But it's nice to be back here and doing a show with you. And I fired up a Unibet account. I'm ready to go. This is great.
Yeah, well, you got to get ready for that wake and rake at 8:30. But it's nice to be. We're in the studio today. First time I've been in the studio in about a month, and I could not locate my ID card last night. And it is, and I think we talked about this week, the worst feeling in the world when you lose something. I tore my apartment apart. I have no idea where this pass went, and it's not a big thing. It's just like an ID badge. It's gone. It went into the abyss. So I had to get a temporary pass when I came in this morning. Like, this is tough. They don't even know who I am. I haven't been in this building in 2-3 months. So we both have temporary passes today, but
how many passes do you think have been lost in the working world over the last 2 years or so?
Oh,
I mean, they're probably like, if anyone's doing well financially, it's the companies that create passes that can let you get into businesses and offices around the world.
Couldn't tell you where mine is. Tough start to the day. But so last night, though, I'm getting ready. You know, we watched the Jays game, a nice afternoon Jays game, 2:00. Mm-hmm. People are pretending to work, obviously at work. They're streaming it on Rogers Ignite. We know who you are. No offense. We're not going to tell. They're watching. They're enjoying the Jays. I mean, as much as you could with Kikuchi's start. I get the notes going. I'm like, all right, feeling good. I know what we're going to talk about tomorrow. You know, no JD. We're going to actually talk to Blake at 7. We're going to talk to Dan Shulman at 8. So we'll get some J stuff in there. But I feel like I, you know, had a good grasp of where we were going. 11:15 p.m., you know, starting to get ready for bed. And Gabriel Moreno's getting called up for real this time. Mm-hmm. It's happening. The young stud is going to make his appearance with the Blue Jays in Detroit this weekend on the road. It's happening. So obviously, text line's always open, 590-590, but we have something real important to talk about. How confident you guys feel listening that he's ready? Does it feel rushed? Are you excited to see him? Obviously, he's like one of the most highly touted prospects the Jays have really ever had. Mm-hmm. It's a great feeling to have someone exciting coming up to the roster to make his debut. But I don't know, Justin, when you saw it roll across your iPhone at 11:30, what initial thoughts did you have?
Truth be told, I think I heard your message come in notifying me, but I was definitely trying to sleep at that point, but obviously woke up to the news, and it's exciting, right? Because, you know, the baseball season's long, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is a long grind, and there are certain things that happen over the course of the season that are, you know, maybe touchstones in terms of things that can add a little bit more energy and pop and break up the monotony and get the team a little bit fired up. And I think this is one of the things that will get this group a little bit fired up. I think not to say that they need that. They're obviously on the heels of a great run. You say Kikuchi lasting 2/3, not a big deal because you erase it with with the news that Gabriel Moreno is coming up. But I think it can do something for a locker room or a clubhouse when a player with this much intrigue and potential pedigree is going to be reintroduced to the clubhouse for the first time, that it can get people a little bit more excited. And anytime you can excite a clubhouse over the course of 6 months and 162 games, it's a good thing.
And
but
the
again,
base.
There are some pros and cons, but I think just from a team perspective first and a fan base, of course, it's a good thing.
Yeah. The fan base, I know right away, Twitter was super excited. People want to see him. You know, even this week, we went back and forth, JD and I and some of our guests, just talking about, is it time? Are you rushing somebody into this situation? And I'll be honest, like I was a bit surprised that all of a sudden it was happening, because there has been really intriguing debates about what it's like to put a young prospect up into the big leagues when he's technically, you know, still developing, or he's in that part of his career where you don't really know what he's doing in AAA. Is obviously incredible. He's had a breakthrough May. He's hitting incredible numbers. He's certainly risen to the challenge of playing back-to-back games at the highest level in the minors. How does that bode when you come to the big leagues? And that's the exciting opportunity we have ahead. I've definitely thought that there was benefits to kind of sheltering that and letting him get ready even more and more and more. And traditionally, the Blue Jays have been the type of organization that doesn't rush a prospect, like right. Vladdy, Bo, all these young guys that were so exciting and the fan base was itching to see them come up. They took their time and they were presented when the staff thought they were ready. And that to me now, okay, well, I don't know. Obviously, I'm not the staff. I'm excited that they think that he's ready. That's the biggest takeaway for me is who cares what I think? Who cares what I thought was the right time or not? Clearly, the Blue Jays staff think that it's time for Moreno to make his debut, and that is the exciting thing. The other side of the argument was, okay, if he comes up and he plays poorly or he's in too much under his head, like what happens with his development? And I go on both sides of that as well. It's like, you know, I also think that's a good learning lesson for a young kid. If you come up and it obviously isn't as seamless as you thought, that's a thing you need to go down and work on, that mental toughness, to work on what it is to rise to the occasion. So if that is a thing that happens, which I hope it isn't, learning lesson on that side. So the pros and cons, I think the list almost evens itself out other than the excitement of a young guy. And hey, why not now? Why not when maybe the stakes are a little lower? There's other catchers that are crushing it right now. He's not going to come in and have to be the savior this weekend in Detroit.
And I think that's a good thing. But there aren't like flashing lights or a klaxon or something that tells you when a player is ready for sure to jump from the minor leagues to the major mm-hmm. leagues. Like there is a bit of guesswork every single time. You can do all that you can at the plate or in the field or on the mound when you're in the minor leagues, and it might not translate immediately to the big league level. But what I like about this decision the most is that it's not contrived in any way. It's not like they're just trying to shoehorn him in because they're bored. Yeah. I mean, they have a need at that position. Yes, there are catchers performing on this roster, but Alejandro Kirk can't play the position every day. And Zach Collins, I don't think you... Yeah, exactly, but... I don't think you want that. So
well, Zach Collins has the game of his life again yesterday. And I'm like,
I guess he couldn't do anything.
I know. Like before this all came out, I'm like, oh, like, he's playing well. You don't need Gabriel Moreno. And then it's like, okay, never mind. I don't need to see him anymore.
But it's a position of need right now because, I mean, Zach Collins may be able to do that every day, but probably not. So it's a position of need. And you just picked up the best player available. Mm-hmm. It wasn't because he was the best prospect available. It wasn't because he's fourth or fifth in Baseball America. It's just because they needed a catcher on the active roster. They looked to their farm system and brought the best catcher up. And I like that part of it the most because you're not putting him into a situation that is contrived. It is what it is supposed to be. And it's just an opportunity born out of not necessity, but just mm-hmm. born out of the situation that the Blue Jays find themselves in.
100%. The buffer is kind of what I feel it as, a comfort level of coming in and not having the immense pressure. Like I remember when Vladdy came up that first game, I was lucky enough to be at the ballpark. I went down as one of the first people to buy his jersey. A little bit of a simp for Vladdy. I was like in the Jays shop when the doors opened. And I remember they were filming in the Jays shop. Like, you know how they put them on the little like screens in the stadium. And there was like a video of me buying a Vladdy jersey. I know. I was like one of the first people. I love Vladdy and he's also number 27. That's been my hockey number. So I was like, I need this jersey, but I remember that day when Vladdy finally made his like major league debut, and just him coming up to plate was like a thunderous standing ovation. The guy hadn't done anything, right? He's just been this amazing prospect. So I feel excited that that's what the Blue Jays are getting again, that reinvigoration into the fan base, the team. I mean, they had an amazing start, then they had that yucky little middle part, and now they're back in a pretty good win streak, except for last night. So I think you're right. He's number fourth ranked prospect in baseball by MLB Pipeline. Like, how can you not be overjoyed to see this guy? There's those little cautionary things you might have in the back of your mind, but hey, sometimes you just got to go with your heart and not think with your brain, as I've said sometimes in the wake and rake.
Well, and I think there are other reasons why it's pretty safe. I mean, he's going to get that ovation eventually, but he's going to start on the road in Detroit against a baseball team
with
that's
a couple fans that might come over the border.
Well, yeah, there'll, be some
of
that
love,
there'll be some of the Eilish forefathers that are looking to get the first jersey for sure that they'll be in attendance. But I think there's not really like an immense pressure to perform. This is kind of like a September call-up in June in that he could be everything. He could exceed everyone's expectations and their obviously lofty expectations. But he's probably still earmarked to go back down because Danny Jansen is going to come back. And Alejandro Kirk has been so good. And you're not going to stick him in a third catcher role. So, yeah, he could force their hand. But if he doesn't, and if he's not lights out and he's not brilliant every at bat and he's not, you know, defensively where he needs to be, it's just a learning experience because he gets to go back down without any embarrassment of, oh, it didn't work out, because this is part of the plan. And it's not, again, as I mentioned, something that's contrived. I think really this is the ideal circumstance to be called up for the first time because there's not that expectation to perform. He hasn't been given the starting catcher position. He's here to just fill a role. And I think for that reason, it's probably something that's fairly safe. Have you been in a position where you, as an athlete, you've been sort of called up to something that's maybe more than you're comfortable with you've had to deal with that?
I actually remember that when I was in high school, they used to have, you got to play, I was in midget, and you got to sometimes get called up to play on the junior team. Big steps for me. Huh? And I was a grade 9 midget player, and I had to go play, I think it was just like a weekend series for the team, the junior team, which has grade 12s. And not only was I like super nervous, but I was clearly not up to the skill level. But the thing that was good is exactly what you're saying, is I was like kind of buffered in, hey, you're going to be a fourth liner. You're going to just like learn from this experience. You're going to learn what it's like to be, you know, heading to university, like all the things you need, culture, preparation. It definitely applies in this situation. It's like he's going to be up with the big league. He's going to understand a little bit more of what it takes and who it's like to be around these leaders. And so there's definitely positives in that sense. And I think, yeah, when I look back, I definitely think the stakes are a little lower for me. But it is a very similar mindset of you need sometimes be put outside of your comfort zone if you're going to be an all-star and you're going to get to that level. Just the last thing on this for me was when I was thinking about what this tandem or this catching, I don't know, trio, or potentially when Danny's back, the four of them, what's going to happen is I think that would be the most intriguing situation to me is what if he is playing really well and they want to keep him up there? You know, what's the tandem going to be like? Is it just Kirk and him back and forth? And then you cycle Collins, and when there's a DH day, I mean, Danny's injury could be 2 to 3 weeks. So you kind of get that buffer to figure it out. But one thing, and I definitely think we could ask Blake and Dan about this when they join the show, is who are you using as a trade bait at this point? I think that if you have Gabriel Moreno in playing, you know, every couple of days, you got four catchers potentially that could be interesting people to dangle for trade bait. So I don't know if that means that you get a lesser look at some of these guys. Does that hurt you down the road, or does it allow you to have more intrigue from other teams that you got four catchers that could be potentially someone that you get rid of? Do you just say, hey, who do you want? Give us your best offer. I think it's interesting to see how they're going to work with having that bulk in that position. Who's going to be the guy that could bring something in for the Blue Jays? Because as we saw last night, the pitching has been quite the conversation as of late. Kikuchi had just a terrible, to put it nicely, a terrible outing yesterday. Yep. Not even a full inning. Yeah. Basically the entire bullpen has to play, and you start to see the cracks, which we have seen at times, in what it's like to have like a fourth and fifth starter that has question marks around them, with Ryu having more uncertainties. Going to see actually today someone that specializes in Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
Not to say that that's what he needs, but that is something he's going to be doing, seeing a doctor today. The injury starts to feel a bit more alarming, more long-term. Stripling getting put into that rotation, great. But then you're losing that guy that's been kind of your Swiss Army knife.
Big piece of the bullpen, yeah.
Big piece. Kikuchi kind of being that inconsistency where he can go 6-7 innings, which is great, or he can do a 1 or 2 inning meltdown.
Yep.
So not knowing exactly what you're getting from him, not having Stripling to be a guy that buffers in between, and not knowing what is happening with Ryu, certainly big conversations around the Blue Jays, something to think about when we talk about the trade deadline, which is still far away, or if that starts putting some pressure on the front office now to be thinking about how to add an arm. But we did see that Tim Mayza and Nate Pearson were making Buffalo appearances yesterday.
Mourinho could very well be the first domino here, because yeah. There's going to have to be some activity over the next 2 months before the trade deadline, clearly, because this team is in all likelihood going to the postseason, but has not been optimized for the postseason. You can handle like the totality of Kikuchi, I guess, mm-hmm. you know, being just sort of middling and not being a dominant fifth start. Like that's not what you need out of him, but you need him to get through starts to a degree that is at least acceptable and doesn't mm-hmm. cave in your bullpen. So obviously the Hyunjin Ryu stuff, I mean, if he's out for the season, if he needs Tommy John, if it's worst case scenario there, you're going to have to bring in a pitcher anyway.
You almost want, no, sorry to interrupt you. You almost want to know, though.
It gives you clarity, like, and that's important.
If he's like going to be out for 2 weeks to a month, you're still in that buffer period of like, okay, well, now what do we do? If he's out for the rest of the season, which I hope he isn't, but you can have that finite understanding that we need to fill that role.
Yep. It's something you had to think about already. And if you get that clarity, you know you have to do something. Mm-hmm. And you've held on to Mourinho through what was a very fascinating lead up into the season mm-hmm. after the lockout ended and they're putting together their roster for opening day. But it felt like they didn't make that big move. That big move is still on the table. I'm not going to say Mourinho is going to be involved in that big move or that this is a showcase for him. But you're right about the surplus at the catching mm-hmm. position. We've seen how valuable Alejandro Kirk can be as an offensive weapon. And even Danny Jansen's had a tremendous year and can be a value as well. So if you have that surplus, if Mourinho proves himself to be a player that's ready to contribute to a postseason contender right now, then maybe this is the beginning of the package that brings back the pitcher that is going to make a big mm-hmm. difference for this team. And of course, they've got two pitchers in the Cy Young conversation right now. They've got Berríos, who you expect to not to say bounce back, but to just be better throughout the rest of the season and be very reliable mm-hmm. When the games do matter more than they do right now. But if you're without Hyunjin Ryu and you're got the volatility of Yusei Kikuchi, you clearly need another arm back there to make sure that you're not taxing mm-hmm. your bullpen all the time. And they probably need bullpen arms as well, but they've got work to do. Mm-hmm. And Mourinho is going to give them some clarity in addition to Hyunjin Ryu giving them some clarity when we find out the extent of that injury.
I am optimistic with Kikuchi just being able to level out. He was an all-star last year. He had a great start to a season and kind of tailed off clearly. And we see little sparks of him having that game and that command that you want, but it's just the consistency. And like, I just think that the way he starts games, and Arden Zwelling had a good article about it post game yesterday. You can find that on sportsnet.ca about the starts that Kikuchi has had just within that first inning. And if it's, and this is a great question for Dan as well, who's been around the game, is what is it about the preparation or the way he starts a game, or is it a mental side of it where you just come out and you don't have it? And you know when he doesn't have it. There's been times where he hasn't had it and he's been able to bounce back, but it just, that was yesterday. And, you know, we heard from the staff yesterday, they put it, you know, lightly about Kikuchi. But Charlie had a clip. I'm not sure if we have the clip. No, it's all right. He basically was saying he just had a bad game. Like he didn't say he sucked, but he said it was really tough. You know, it's on him and that's okay. He just wasn't good today, is what he said. I don't know what the reason is. I know he found a way to regroup before, but he just couldn't do it today. So, you know, they're not going to sugarcoat it. It wasn't a great start for him, but I think there is that positive that he can recover. So we actually have a text in the text line. Allison in Toronto, is it fair to assume that this is temporary and Mourinho will be sent back down when Jansen returns? And I think that's the big question here is what are the expectations for Gabriel Mourinho when he comes up, if he's just a filler piece and he gets his reps and he gets his big league experience and he goes down and continues to crush it at AAA, that's great. If he can actually fight for a regular rotation as a catcher, that's also great. And I think that's really going to be something we keep our eyes on for the next 2-3 weeks when Danny Jansen is out, is what are you expecting from him? And can he change your opinion in that amount of time to really earn that spot? It honestly could be either way.
I think that's the best thing about it, is it can sort of be packaged or sold in any way. It could be just the simple call-up, being the next player up that's going to fill a void, or it can be the start of his long tenure with the Toronto Blue Jays. I think that's sort of it's open-ended, which is the beauty of it, because that's what takes the pressure off when it is whatever happens, happens, and whatever happens is okay. That's a good spot for an athlete to be in. A bad spot for an athlete to be in is when you're warming up. I think this is probably I've never experienced this, but the most helpless feeling as an athlete has to be when you're warming up before a start as a starting pitcher in baseball and you don't have it and you cannot find it. Like, imagine being game 7 in the playoffs, World Series. You're the starting pitcher basically the entire game, rests in your hands, and you can't hit the strike zone. And I think we see this a lot, where it's just like, clearly they don't have it on the mound in that moment. And to suggest that they had it beforehand when they were warming up would be pretty silly. Like, I think they know. And again, never experienced this myself, but that's got to be up there with the most helpless moments for athletes.
I've been out there where you just don't have the legs and you're skating around a warm up. You're like, oh my God, like my legs are cement. And you're trying to like just keep up. Okay, what are the hands there? No, okay, the hands aren't there.
You can hide more in hockey.
You can hide more in hockey. Like, you just, do a little dump and change. I'll play a defensive role tonight. But Kikuchi, hopefully turns it around. Got some time. They're going to be on the road. We're going to see Gabriel Moreno. That's where the focus will be. So, yeah, keep your text coming, 590-590. Let us know what you think of the decision to call up Gabriel Moreno. You confident in it? You excited? You feel like it's rushed? I feel like there's both camps. So which one are you in? Let us know. We're going to move on to some NHL. You're a big NHL guy at Yahoo. You can find all Cuthbert's stuff there. What's your Twitter account? JC Cuthbert?
JC Cuthbert.
Give him a follow. Instagram? You're not a big Instagram guy. Give him a follow there.
Twitter
anyway. Yeah, you're always putting out great articles. Obviously, the Leafs season ended too short, but the Oilers were something you covered with great depth. Now their season has come to an end. But Ken Holland was talking postseason a little bit about the goaltending situation with the Oilers, and there is everything revolves around the Leafs here. There's always a way to relate that back to our Toronto team. So we have a clip of him just giving a little bit of insight to the difficult situation the Oilers are in. What is the number one goalie market out there? And we're going to play that clip now and discuss.
No, I don't think we have a number one goalie. I do not know. We have 2 1As this year with Koski and Smitty. When they're both healthy, I'd like them. 1A and 1B. How do I describe 1A and 1B? The guys that can play 40 to 45 games. A number one goalie to me can play 55 to 60. Yeah, I don't think many guys play more than 60. What is there in the league? 10 or 12 of those? If we went by definition, you and I sat down, and then the reality is they're difficult. I don't know if any of them are available.
Okay. Yeah, I think he was putting it nicely that they don't have a number one goalie.
Yeah, he definitely caught himself.
Yeah,
there.
He's like, oh, we have a 1A, 1B. It's like, you maybe have like not a 1 at all. Like, you have a 2 and a 3 with a big hole.
And when you're like classifying 1A, 1B just by starts, like the starts are born out of the set. Like, one else to start. So Mike Smith, if they had no other goalies, would just be a 1 if he started 60 games. But I think he's right about everything that he says. I mean, you get punished in the NHL for not drafting and developing netminders. It is almost impossible to find them through free agency or trade because they're not squandered very often by NHL teams because they are so rare. I think Jacob Markstrom is really one of the only exceptions in Calgary in that the Flames went out and just outbid everyone else for his services when he came up. But he only came up because Thatcher Demko was drafted and developed by the Vancouver Canucks. The Oilers are in the same position as the Maple Leafs, same position as a lot of other teams, where they have to figure out if they can uncover a number one goaltender in the summer and in the free market. And the Oilers have a huge task ahead of them. Mike Smith might make it easier by retiring, and then they can allocate the dollars elsewhere, because it was a bit of a road hockey scenario going on with Smith at times during the postseason, and still they got to the Western Conference Final. But I think the one advantage the Leafs have as they enter the goaltending carousel here is that you kind of understand. You understand a lot about Jack Campbell. You know his strengths. You know his weaknesses. I don't know for sure if you know he's a bona fide number one, because if you go by Ken Holland's definition, he's only been a 1A.
Yeah.
He's only been a 1A. He had his first chance to be a starting goaltender this past season and did not make it through unscathed. He dealt with injuries. The Leafs were forced to go to their 1B, 1Cs, if you want to call them that. So it's tough. It's tough if you're not Tampa with Vasilevsky. It's tough if you're not the Rangers with Shesterkin. And the Leafs find themselves in a position that could be no win, because Jack Campbell looks like the best option, and I'm not sure if you agree or not, but he's the most familiar option, but we still don't know if he's anything more than a Ken Holland-defined 1A, which is really the number one concern for the Leafs this offseason. They've got to figure out if they can make that right move, and if Jack Campbell's not the guy, they might just be out of luck, because as Ken Holland said, they're not out there.
No, it's dry in terms of the goaltending market out there. And I think that I think the Jack thing has more layers than even that. How much can you afford to overpay a goaltender that you don't know exactly if he can make it as a number one goalie, using Ken Holland's gauge of 55 to 60 games? We haven't seen that yet. I think that he's going to be due for a good contract. People are saying the $5 to $6 million range.
He is a player who's made very little in his career and needs to take this opportunity to maximize.
Go get that bag, King, as we say. Go get that bag, King, but also don't get it if it's for the Leafs. Get a hometown You Love Us discount. You're not a hometown kid, but
line
also,
up the sponsorships.
Yes,
let's go.
Just, find some other way to make some money if you want to stay here, because it can't afford to pay you that money. But there's a side of Jack Campbell that he is this lovely, wonderful human that the team loves, and he loves playing in Toronto, and he makes that very clear. But I also think he's not going to take a huge pay cut. He's not one of those guys. He's not a Simmons or a Spezza who wants to play here in the end of his career. Like, he's in, this is his prime right now. Like, he's earned his money, and the fact that the starting goaltender market is so dry, that's even more incentive for him to maybe test free agency and see what's out there. And, we're approaching that time of the year where this is a real issue for the Maple Leafs. If they can't find any way to secure something in the next month, it's scary. He might go out there and someone gives him the offer that he wants, and it's a decision between money and making your fan base that you like happy. And that's really tough to put on a goaltender that is, maybe has a landing spot of a couple teams that are really in the hunt. So I don't know what other goalies, if it's not Jack Campbell, that are available.
I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury's out there,
who's like 90 years old.
Ville Husso's out there. He can't be considered more than a 1A or 1B, again, by Ken Holland's definition. Like, it is uncertainty, even with the devil you know, which is Jack Campbell. Mm-hmm. But the situation demands that the price isn't going to drop for a variety of reasons, but one of the reasons why it's going to be driven up is the fact that there are more teams like Edmonton and Toronto than there are teams that have solid goaltending. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a bunch of teams around the league that are going to be interested in Jack Campbell.
That felt like they fell short just because they didn't have a goaltender.
Exactly. And they're going to be dangling that carrot in front of him. I obviously, we don't have the answer of what would happen if they're not able to retain Campbell, or even if they want to retain Campbell. We don't know that for certain, but it's going to be a challenge to get what you got from Jack Campbell in the postseason elsewhere. He wasn't the reason why the Leafs lost in the playoffs in round one to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Was he able to outplay Andrei Vasilevsky? I mean, there's an argument that it was really close, and that didn't.
I think there
was
like a game or two where it was came down to Jack Campbell maybe needing to elevate. And
he didn't
save
steal
him.
A game.
Yeah, exactly that. He was great, but he wasn't otherworldly that we see with these two teams that are playing tonight, Lightning and Rangers Game 5 tonight, where it's Shesterkin and Vasilevsky are stealing games for their team.
That
is the difference.
Those are two goaltenders that can make up for deficiencies. Mm-hmm. The Leafs are going to be closer to Colorado, in that Colorado hasn't drafted and developed the goaltender that they're riding to the Stanley Cup final. They are going with Pavel Francouz, who had absolutely no pedigree entering these playoffs, had failed on the postseason stage before. Darcy Kemper has let them down in a way that could repeat itself for a team like the Leafs, in that you spend a lot to get something you think is going to be a sure thing, and it doesn't turn out to be.
He's a guy that could be available.
And he's also available.
So do you go the same route if you're a Leafs guy? Okay, you can't get Jack Campbell. Is Darcy Kemper the next
I don't know how you could
fit?
Trust Kemper over Campbell. I certainly wouldn't pay him more.
No.
So,
especially with how he's ending this season. That's not a great
no.
paste and in your mouth if you're on the hunt for him.
Colorado could be the exception to the rule, where they can overcome the fact that they don't have the better goaltender in many of the series they've played so far. And win the Stanley Cup. The Leafs have to go that route. They have to get two goaltenders that they can rely on, not to win a Stanley Cup. The second one doesn't have to be of that level, but you need a quality starter and you need quality insulation. And I think we know that Jack Campbell can be one of those two. Mm-hmm. I think we know Peter Mrazek isn't capable of being that. So they have work to do, but they've got to follow the Colorado model, which is to be very good at everything else, because your goaltending is not going to be Vasilevsky. It's not going to be Shesterkin, but it's got to be palatable. And we'll see if palatable is what Jack Campbell ends up to be when it comes down to his contract this summer.
Is that your biggest point of curiosity for tonight's game? And we're going to see Lightning Rangers back on the ice. You know, for me, it's just been a battle of goaltending, which is kind of boring when you look at the other series, which is the opposite, where pucks were going in and the goaltending was abysmal at times, and it was more like high-scoring beer league.
Mm-hmm.
This other side of the conference finals is tightly matched. It is incredible how these teams rely on their goaltending. We're back here, series tied 2-2. Who gets the upper hand this time around, and is it just dependent on who shows up in net?
Well, I think Igor Shesterkin has to be, as he's been in the previous 8 games at Madison Square Garden, which is nothing short of brilliant, because that's the goaltending battle. Like, it is the headliner, but it's not the biggest storyline, I don't think, coming into this game, because I think we expect both the goaltenders to be very good. I think what we've seen in this series is that it's kind of trending toward Tampa Bay, in that
they got the
Rangers somehow, despite not being going the distance in the previous 2 postseasons, are not the fresher team. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that are banged up. They've actually played every other night for about like a month. Mm-hmm. Like, it's taken its toll, at least it seems. And there are a bunch of injuries and key injuries, I think, that they're dealing with here. So we'll have to see who's going to be in the lineup. But the fact that they've lost Filip Hedl, Ryan Strome, Barclay Goodrow's banged up, like, that's the center ice position for the New York Rangers. And if Braden Point was in the lineup, yeah, they'd take advantage of that every night. But even without Braden Point, I think there's a real clear advantage shaping up in this series for Tampa Bay through the middle of the ice. And if anything's going to change in terms of home ice and goaltenders dominating on their own sheet, I think it could change tonight. And we'll get into it with the Wake and Rake later. But I think this is kind of set up for Tampa Bay to take in control if the Rangers are beat up through center ice as much as we think they are.
Tampa Bay, you know, has the proven know how to win championship mentality. They know how to bear down and be resilient. We've seen that this series already. With their back up against the wall, you can trust in their stars shining and having the game that Vasilevsky needs. So we'll talk about that in the Wake and Rake at 8:30. Blake will join us. We're also going to get Sam McKee, who's going to help us set up the RBC Canadian Open, which begins today. Lots of exciting things. We've got Canada going to play in the Nations League game, starting to get ready for the World Cup. They're back, which is exciting. It's great to see them back in action. We're going to talk to Blake Murphy at 7 as well. Poor guy's getting double duty today. He never stops. We're going to get into some NBA finals with him as well. Just so much to talk about this morning. But before that, we're going to get into the A-list. And what better time to talk about something that might make your skin crawl, has to do with food, than sitting beside Justin Cuthbert, who has just an irrational fear of ranch dressing.
Yes, I do. I hope this is not ranch dressing.
It might be.
Okay. You're playing to your audience then.
That's right. All right, let's take a break and get into the A-list. This is the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Morning show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. You know what? I love Nickelback. I don't care if you put me in that pile of people that have no taste. I think Nickelback's great.
I think making fun of Nickelback
is fun.
So played out.
It's fun, but then you're like, well, why do I not like Nickelback? Because everybody else says that you shouldn't like Nickelback.
I think there's good and bad. I mean, I think that's why they're a divisive band. Is that there are some moments that Nickelback has had that have worked.
Sure, but
Burn It to the Ground, I think, is one of my personal favorites. Yeah, I think it's a bona fide jam.
Yeah.
And then there's him, like, singing about a photograph and presenting that photograph to create memes for a lifetime. So there's been some good, there's been some bad. That, you know, we were both kind of nodding our head there. Yeah. So I think we both, we're just getting old and lame.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it's a good sports radio song, you know? All the guys driving to this construction site, they know Nickelback. They're bobbing their head on the DVP. We will talk about Nickelback in this A-list, but I gave you the tease of the...
Nickelback and Ranch. I'm in for one.
We're in for a good one. Let's get into it.
Now, it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, food takes are always spicy on the show. Get it? Spicy.
Good one.
So it's about time that we had a weird food story. Kentucky quarterback Will Levis was on a popular podcast, Part of My Take, which I'm sure you've heard, where he's talking about some of his interesting dietary preferences. There's two parts to the story, and they're both absurd. So here is clip number one of something that he does, which apparently has beneficial things for his athletic career.
I do think that mayo gets a bad rap a lot of times. Like, people like to thumb their nose at mayo and be like, oh, it's the worst condiment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You change the game, though. You put mayo in your coffee.
I do think it's a staple of where it has gotten to me as far as I have so far with my body and my physical performance. So it's worked so far, and I'm going to keep doing it.
I love that. Built by mayo, Will Levis. That's a nice tag for you.
Built by mayo. Kentucky quarterback. He's good. He's putting mayo in his coffee.
Is there like a justification for
that? Okay, there is, because I did some research, because I used to train. I used to have like a personal trainer when I was trying to be fit, okay? And he swore by bulletproof coffee, which was something that
That's butter, right?
And you put butter in your coffee, and it's supposed to, I Googled this, provide steady, long-lasting energy without a blood sugar crash. In theory, since fat slows digestion, the caffeine in coffee is absorbed slower and provides longer lasting energy. So I'm assuming, since mayo has dairy or butter, or like it has that kind of fat, that it does the same thing. But that's disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, I think I actually have tried bulletproof coffee.
It's not bad.
There's not much to it. Like, and I imagine there wouldn't be much to the mayo either. And that's me being someone who hates mayo. But the first thing I was like, I get milk in my coffee to change the color. I thought is the mayo just to change the color or the nutritional qualities? I guess he's going for the nutritional qualities. It makes sense if it does the same thing as the bulletproof coffee. But like, coffee is one of life's greatest joys.
Yeah, especially when you work the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Download and subscribe to our podcast while you're at it.
And to ruin it by putting one of the most... disgusting
so bad
foods in it is really a shame. But if it gets him to the NFL, I mean,
I think
he's just
it.
Telling himself that. But I don't know. I let people do what they want to do, and
we shame them.
If it's mayo and coffee, we'll just shame them quietly.
What about the second one? So he adds that he has another interesting food take, which there was no justification behind this one, just something he does.
Okay.
What about the bananas? Are you still eating bananas with the entire peel on?
Yeah, when that all came out, it was pretty crazy. And just to tell the story real quick, I mean, I put on my TikTok a video of me just eating like a completely brown banana and just eating it whole, peel and all. Didn't think much of it. And then when I got the starting job last year, I think some fan tried to like troll me on Twitter and was like, "This is your starting quarterback, like going and doing this, like." Nonsense, and it actually backfired him and got me a lot more good press than anything, which was pretty funny.
All right, this guy's a maniac.
He's insane. Eating a banana with the peel on, like, you know when you have a banana that's too ripe, not ready? Is it ripe? No, it's not ripe enough.
It's not ripe enough.
Okay, and it's, like, green, and you can taste that, like, filmy layer on it where it's, like, it's not a good banana, but you can, I feel like you can taste the peel. I don't know if it's just, like, you know what I'm trying to explain? Like, it's, like, there's... When you peel it off, there's like the layers of peel that don't really come off with it. You know what it tastes like. This guy's eating that on purpose.
I mean, I definitely know what it... Well, he said it was overripe, though.
Well, he says he does both.
So it's like almost like withering away. Like it's very thin when it's ripe. But I think everyone's been in this position where it's completely brown. It's like this thin... And that's maybe
put
like
it in the freezer or use it for a smoothie or something.
Put in some banana bread and then you're not a maniac. But... I think you know the taste of the peel because if you can't rip it because it's not ripe enough, mm-hmm. sometimes people do the teeth to open it up and then you know what it tastes
That's
like.
That's where right? it's coming from.
So that might be the worst thing that I do in terms of food is that I open bananas with my teeth. But this guy's just, yeah, he's off. I mean, you know, he's maybe just trying to get that following the TikTok.
Yeah,
he's already
working.
Mentioning it.
You know, he's getting airtime here in Canada.
But somehow his second one is worse, you're right, than putting mayo in coffee. So, maniac.
So, text line says mayo equals egg yolks. So, basically, you're cracking an egg into your coffee. I mean, I've seen it in smoothies or protein shakes, a raw egg, but that's masked by your bananas, hopefully, and, you know, fruits and things that mask the egg yolk. But anyway, disgusting. If you do this... Let us know why, please. 5-95-90.
Or don't.
Or don't. All right. The second on the text line, I mean on the A-list, the Angels are amidst their longest losing streak in the history of the organization. Things have turned quite rapidly. They fire their manager, Joe Maddon. Mike Trout might be injured. Sky's falling. So to try to get out of the slump, all the batters walked up to the plate yesterday to a different Nickelback song.
Mm-hmm.
Taking extreme measures to end their losing streak. Strange idea, but I kind of love it. You know, you just kind of, hey, we're going to go all in on a Nickelback game. Maybe that's the thing that propels you to a win. So,
did it?
This was last night. Let's take a look. Angels. They lost.
Then I get
they lost to the Red Sox again.
They're going to have to go. They're going to have
1-0. It was close.
Yeah, progress. Progress with Nickelback.
But you go through the Nickelback playlist, and I was like, okay, what would if I had to pick a Nickelback walk-up song, what would it be? And I think it's Burn It to the Ground.
Burn It to the Ground's mine, too.
It's like the biggest song. Like, you're just like, let's go. Like, I'm getting up there, and I'm going to crush this ball. Since you said that, my second one would probably be Rockstar. Like, you're coming up, you got that swagger. You want to be a rock star. They also mentioned the word baseball.
There you go.
I want a brand new house on an episode of Cribs and a bathroom I can play baseball in. So I know that's not the part that you come up to, but Nickelback, baseball, there's your connection. Or you're doing How You Remind Me, because like this is How You Remind Me of who I really am. I'm a good baseball player. You know, our team is good. Let's remind me of that. Anyway.
And yet it didn't work. I have a feeling that Gabriel Mourinho coming up is going to give more of a lift to the Blue Jays than Nickelback gave to the LA Angels. And, I mean, after they lost, I guess that is the case.
Yeah. Maybe they'll try a different artist for their next game to see if they can get out of a losing streak. More baseball in the A-list. Just crushing.
It's a loaded A-list.
There is lots today in the A-list. This one's all about karma. All right. If the Major League Baseball world can't strip the Astros of their tainted 2017 championship, then someone or some external force is trying to. The Houston Astros 2017 World Series banner has gone missing from the plaza outside of Minute Maid Park. According to the Houston Chronicle, the metal 2017 World Series banner, which is one of several in the plaza, which has all of the team's postseason appearances like division titles, division series wins, league championships, and the World Series title, all on display, All of those are there except for the 2017 World Series banner, which was apparently ripped right off the metal pole. But their gold World Series banner in the stadium is obviously still there. But they're trying to decipher why this happened, where this went. And the Astros, you know, put out a little statement there that it was not stolen, but it something due to a weather-related issue, it has gone missing. I don't think there was a tornado. I tried to look it up. There's no tornadoes happening. There was no extreme weather situations. And it is a weird coincidence that it was just their World Series banner that mysteriously disappeared. So I don't know. Is it a fan thing? Is the weather striking down on that tainted championship?
Have the New York Yankees been through Houston lately? Because there's obviously no team that is more upset about that World Series title than the Yankees. Yeah, very strange. It's very strange to lie about that, though.
Say someone stole it.
You got vandalized, like, or you're a victim of thievery. Like, that's not like an embarrassing thing. Like, you'll just have to replace it, or the cops will catch the thieves and you can get it back. I mean, maybe you are embarrassed by just winning that World Series, so just making lies and justifications for it. I guess that's the case, but I would, if there was a thief, probably wearing a Yankee hat.
They're going to look at the cameras to see, but the jokes were just writing themselves online. Was it replaced with a trash can? Oh, you're telling me that someone stole signs? How ironic. Yeah, I don't know. If you're listening from that area, just let us know where the sign is. You got it in your house. Good for you. I love it. You know, do what you need to do to feel better about that win. Okay, last thing on the A-list. How's this for one of the greatest sentences ever spoken, all right? Apple has secured the rights for a Formula One movie with Brad Pitt.
Interesting.
As an F1 fan.
Do we know who he's playing?
Well, we sure do. He's going to be coming. Not a real life story. He's going to play an F1 driver who comes out of retirement to race alongside a rookie driver and other top drivers in the sport. To add to that, Formula One champion Lewis Hamilton is going to co-produce it with Jerry Bruckheimer. And the screenplay is written by one of the three screenwriters who just wrote Top Gun Maverick, which is the best movie I've ever seen in my life. Honestly, I'm going to go back and watch it again and again. It was so good. If you haven't seen it yet, please go. And also, one of the directors from Top Gun Maverick will be helping with this movie.
So it's checking all your boxes.
It's checking all my boxes. And it's not going to be Brad Pitt's, you know, first time in the sports world, obviously with Moneyball. He was a Best Actor nominee. He's got that athletic background of knowing what it's like to be a star athlete. Okay. On the big screen. I think it's going to be absolutely electric. I cannot wait to watch it. I don't know when the release date is. It's going to be somewhere down the road. I don't think they've started filming, but they've secured the rights for it. F1 is the spicy thing to be in right now. Apple's going to go in and create, hopefully, a masterpiece.
Now, I didn't do my homework last time I was on the show, which was to consume how many seasons of Drive to Survive? Four?
I think we're at four.
So I consumed zero additional episodes of what I already had consumed.
That's okay.
But my big concern with this, because they're already cornered the market on F1, which is great. Mm. But the straight to Netflix movie, I feel like there isn't a long history of success with that.
Isn't it going to be wrong. Straight to Apple TV?
Oh, I thought you said Netflix.
Apple.
Okay, so then I guess I'm surprised Netflix allowed this to happen.
Well, they probably got outbid.
I guess so.
It's competitive.
They're probably not really concerned about it because they have the premier F1 product, I guess, in the end.
Speaking of F1, I'm going to go to the Montreal F1.
I might be there as well.
Oh, are you? Have you got tickets yet?
I don't. But there's
Have you seen the price of the tickets?
And I'm not even an F1 person. I probably wouldn't be paying for the tickets. But there's a chance I might stumble into some tickets.
Oh. Say that. Would you like to stumble into them?
Are you buying tickets?
Well, I'm trying not to because they're in the $600 to $700 to $800 range at this point just to go to general admission. You're not even in a grandstand.
I don't even know what general admission would look like.
I looked into it because I was like, hey, if I spend $400 on general admission or $700 or $800 to be in a grandstand, there's clearly a difference. I did my research. And if you're an F1 fan, general admission is like you just walk around. Like there's like viewing areas. But if you're not in the first one or two rows, there's no, like you're up against a fence. Whereas a grandstand obviously has like the the seating, the escalated seating where you can see over the people in front of you, and you're in a, like a specific part of the turn. And there's different levels of grandstands you should go to, like in terms of like which is the best one, which has the best view, which is the dumpster grandstand to be at. That the dumpster grandstand is still $800 to go to. It's like grandstand 47. Like I was reading this list, like don't go in that one. I'm like, well, that's the only one I can not even afford, but go to.
How long until the novelty wears off?
Never. Well, this is the first time that one's been there in like 3 years.
If you're at one turn and you see that turn over and over and over again.
I don't know, I'm in.
I feel like the general admission, you just walk around, experience. Maybe. I feel like it would be almost like, it would be more than a golf tournament. And the PGA or the Canadian Open is this weekend, and they're making that a scene. I think you guys talked about on the A-list before. But I feel like just being there, you know, there's probably different activities, people like a festival. I think that's the draw to it. Because just sitting in a seat and watching one turn, I think would be exciting for about 10 minutes.
Well, with the speed of which they go by, you're like, whoa, okay, now I got to wait. And then, oh, there it goes again. So, yeah, I don't think you're getting, like, the nice slow pace, the PGA. But I'm definitely hoping to go if I can weasel some tickets, maybe off.
It might not be a slow pace at St. George's this weekend based on what they're trying to do over there.
No, it's a whole thing. We're going to talk about that in the Wake and Rake with Sam McKee. That was it for the A-list today. We got big, massive guest, big get. This guy is so busy. I'm surprised he has time for us. It's Blake Murphy. You might remember him. He used to be a part of the show. He has escalated his career, and he is just a superstar in the making. So we're going to talk to him afterwards. A little Jays, a little NBA Finals. What's Gabriel Moreno's expected weekend ahead, and how long is he going to be up with this team? That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.